Welcome to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Joyous conversations about what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about our one reality. You have nothing to fear. You are eternal and you are perfectly loved. Knowing the truth changes everything. Now, here's Roberta.
Welcome to Seek Reality. I'm Roberta Grimes, and I am especially glad that you can be with us today. Dear friends, many people have asked me what my most recent fun book has to do with the afterlife. This one is called The Fun of Living Together. We must learn to live together as brothers or perish together as fools. And of course, that's a quote from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. What on earth does healing our racial issues have to do with studying the afterlife? Well, it has quite a lot to do with it, actually, but this is going to take some explanation. So today, your guest will be your host. I've often told the story of how I first began to wonder about what was going on behind the curtain, and I've told other pieces of my personal story over time, but it's probably been 3 or 4 years since I've told my whole story in one segment like this. And a lot has happened that is relevant to my telling you how I came to write The Fun of Living Together that I really need to sort of fit into the larger picture. We also have a lot more listeners now, and I think it's probably time for me to tell my story again and bring it up to date, because unless you know something about my life, frankly, my obsession with studying the afterlife makes very little sense. I seem very eccentric. When I was 8 years old, and this was actually April 9th of 1955, I even know the date, I woke up in the middle of the night. It was probably about 4 in the morning, and I knew there was no God, and I was terrified. And in the midst of my fear, there was a brilliant flash of, like, magnesium, bright white light in the room, just a flash. And I remember what that room looked like to this day because of that flash. I know where my toy horse was, where the dolls were. It's amazing. And a voice said, you wouldn't know what it is to, what did he say? I've blown the line. You wouldn't know what it is to have me unless you knew what it was to be without me. I will never leave you again. He said it better than I could. And it was a young male voice. I didn't know who it was, but I didn't think it was anyone in particular. What I thought was this. That's handy. If you forget there's a God, they'll just remind you that there's a God. And I went right back to sleep. But I never told anyone what had happened. That's the thing about these extraordinary experiences. You generally don't talk about them. They're too personal. They're too private. And anyway, when you're a child, you assume whatever happens to you is normal. So I thought, okay, I'll probably learn about it in, you know, Sunday school, maybe in regular school. I never did. You never ask a question. You don't get any answers. And I was so frustrated that I actually majored in early Christian history in college because I figured when you go to college and you don't have to ask a question, they'll tell you what happens if you forget there's a God. But of course, that didn't happen. Instead, let me just say as an aside, if you love the Bible, it's like loving hot dogs. If you love hot dogs, never watch them being made. If you love the Bible, don't ever watch anyone making it, because I learned a lot about the Bible that later came in handy when the time came for me to deconstruct it all. But I majored in early Christian history in college, and I was so devout that I started in my early teens to read the Bible cover to cover. I would read a little bit. Usually I would turn a couple of pages each day. And to this day, I think I've read it probably 7-8 times. I'm not really certain. I didn't keep track. It didn't seem to be important. But I became very familiar with the Bible. And I began to feel very frustrated by the time I was a junior in college, because what do you do with it? I assumed I'd become a minister. I mean, that's what you'd have to do with it. I was a Protestant at the time. And I was feeling very discouraged. One day I came home from my summer job. It was the summer I turned 20, and I sat down on my bed, broad daylight this time, and over my right shoulder, splashing in the room, was the same white light. And the same voice said, this time there was actually music with it, and the same voice said, I will never leave you. So that validated for me that what I was remembering from when I was 8, which, by the way, still seems as real as if it just happened last night, and it's, you know, been almost certainly more than 60 years. That validated that it was all real, and that's when I wanted to start understanding what was going on. But the problem is this. Nobody had recently made that journey. I could find books of ghost stories, but that was about it. Then the wonderful Dr. Raymond Moody in 1976 published Life After Life, which is his account of near-death experiences. And actually, that's he coined the term near-death experiences. And that opened the floodgate. Suddenly, there were a lot of books about what really I think is the best part of studying the afterlife. We have hundreds of accounts received through deep trance mediums in the early part of the 20th century. And those accounts are so real and so vivid and so consistent. And they were received over 30 or 40 years. So, and there's no copying. I've read hundreds. I've never seen any two that were that clearly I thought, well, this one is copying another one. Never. They're all different. But they're all about the same place. Now, some were received in southern England, some in the eastern United States. They're all talking about the same place. That is probably the first thing that made me know this is all real, because I didn't see any outliers. There was no one who said, well, there's purple people there. There's no one who said, I discovered that, you know, God was there on his throne. Nothing was an outlier. They were talking about this glorious, beautiful place, this process that is so loving and gentle that happens at death. It was all the same. So I wasn't writing things down. I was internalizing it and keeping it in my heart. But within probably a decade, by the time I was in my early 30s, I was beginning to understand that this is real. What I had been called, the research I'd been called to do by that experience early in life, I thought the only way to figure out where that light came from is to figure out where the dead are now. It's probably the same place. And that turned out actually to be right. But it was a beautiful private time. I don't think anyone I even knew what I was researching. And so I continued to do this research till I was 50. I just kept reading when I could and doing a lot of other things with my life. I have three children. I was rearing children. I was practicing law. I'll never get it right, so I'm still practicing law. And I was still reading the Gospels and reading the Bible. There are parts of it I can literally quote at this point. But then came that moment that I still remember vividly. I believe it was in the early part of the 21st century, must have been 02 or 03, when I realized that no matter how hard I looked in doing this research, which I loved, I could never find any evidence whatsoever that what I had always believed as a Christian was true. There was no material God. There was no God that judged us. There was no hell. There was nothing to fear. It was very upsetting for me to realize that. I mean, my thought literally at the time was, could you go to hell for having discovered there is no hell? I mean, it was very troubling to me. I had been such a Christian. I was a Protestant. I was married in the early 70s and became a Catholic. Reared my children Catholic. I was a lector. I was deep into it, but it wasn't real. I was so troubled. I remember the moment when I realized I have to give up. I'll never find any evidence that the death of Jesus on the cross has ever made a difference for a single person. That's a very upsetting thing to find when you're such a devout Christian. And probably almost nobody else who is as devout as I was also has studied the afterlife. So it puts me in an odd position. They're mutually exclusive in most people's minds, but I'm kind of an expert on both. I literally stopped reading the Bible then. I'd been doing it since I was probably 12 or 13. I stopped reading it, put it away, and it was probably 2 years. Maybe it was 04 or 05 before I finally said, I just can't. I was just practicing Catholicism and pretending I hadn't discovered this horrible information. But I said, you know, I remember what Jesus said, and a lot of what he said I think is real. My problem was I didn't want to find what he had said that wasn't real. But one day it was raining and my kids were off doing other things, and I picked up my Bible. I said, okay, I'm going to try it. I read just the Gospels, nothing else. And what I discovered that day, it was the greatest day of my life. I discovered that Jesus told us 2,000 years ago things about God, reality, death, the afterlife, and the meaning and purpose of human life that were exactly what the people we used to think were dead have been telling us since the very end of the 19th century. It was all the same, even in little details. I was astonished. And that made me know two things are real. The afterlife is real, and what we know from the people we used to think were dead is real. And Jesus is real, because you wouldn't have all those correspondences if that weren't true. Now, this since has become even more amazing to me, because when you think about it, the words of Jesus were translated. They were spoken in Aramaic. They were translated from Aramaic into Greek, and then much later from Greek into modern English. If you take a direct Aramaic translation from Aramaic to English, it doesn't really fit. But if you take the double translation into Greek and then into English, it perfectly agrees with what the dead say. I don't know what you would call a miracle, but I call that a miracle. That is God reaching out to us again. As God keeps reaching out to us to finally enlighten us about what actually is true, you wouldn't have all those direct correspondences in a two-step translation if God had not literally superintended those translations. It's an amazing thing. I mean, I'd always had faith. I'd always had belief. But certainty is, I have to tell you, a whole lot better than just belief. I am certain. And I was that day, before the end of that day, I told my husband, who at first thought I was possessed, by the way, that I was suddenly doing this. He didn't really know what I'd been studying. And he was very Catholic. But by the end of that day, I knew for certain that Jesus is real and the afterlife is real. And here I was somewhere in my mid-50s, I think, when this happened. I'd have to do the math. But from that day forward, I have known the truth. And Jesus said, you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. Indeed, it does. What I'm going to do now is tell you how I began to do this work. Because the first thing you realize when you find something so extraordinary is you can't keep it to yourself. And so I haven't. I've been working ever since then to give it to you. This is Roberta Grimes, Seek Reality, and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes, and we're today just having our host be our guest, because I'm telling you yet again, and probably for the first time for some of this, how I got to be where I am and why I'm doing the work that I do. When I first discovered that, in fact, Jesus is real and the afterlife is real, I lived with that for a little while. And then I started going to a Unity church. We had moved to Austin, Texas. I started going to a Unity church. And one day I was sitting in the pew, and it just occurred to me that I'd had a really good life. I was already into my 60s, and it was time. So in April of 2009, I gave my life to God. How do you do that? Well, I started saying, thank you for giving me work to do. Thank you for showing me how to do it. It's a gratitude affirmation. It's the most powerful kind of prayer, because you put your own energy behind having the prayer come true. Almost immediately, I felt different. But that's okay. I mean, great, you know, take me over, God. It's your turn. I began within just probably a month or two to write The Fun of Dying. I didn't have that title. I didn't even know what I was doing. I actually got it into my head to teach some of the afterlife stuff in my church. And so I was putting together materials, and I taught the course, and then I kept working on the materials. I didn't know at the time that everything I write is channeled. You know, you don't know. It just was really flowing. It was easy. It was fun. And into the fall and winter of 2009, I was just writing. I really had fun with it. And one day, a friend of mine who is very, very psychic, she actually is a medium, called me. We were talking, and she said, you do know you've got five dead clergymen working with you, don't you? And I said, no, I don't know who's working with me. I'm psychic as a post. Well, she told me who they were, and one of them is very advanced. Then there were some who had come over earlier, five of them. And the last one she told me about was Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. When I heard that name, I said, why would he work with me? And she said, he wants to set the record straight. They all do. Now, this is the first time I've really publicly said that he was that fifth one, the mystery one. But I can't begin to tell you how much that sobered me, thinking that someone of his stature was trying to get the word out. But from then on, I knew they were there. So these people who were channeling this information through me were very insistent it had to be done a certain way. I would wake up any morning. It wouldn't happen if I wasn't going to be writing, but any morning that I planned to do writing, I would wake up and I'd have a list in my head of things they wanted me to change, which was really very efficient. Sometimes I disagreed, so the next day I was writing, that would still be on the list. Literally, that's how it worked. And I knew that it was all done when I no longer was getting lists and I was just polishing the book. I easily found a publisher, but I thought it was such a good book that I could probably sell it in New York. I had a New York agent because I had sold a couple of books in New York in the early 90s, one of which, of course, was my Thomas. And so I decided I would contact, after all those years, my old agent, and I sent an email. A week later, I got back the information that she had died, just died, apparently. So that was when I knew I was supposed to go to New York, and I published this with a very small publishing house. I wanted to call it Dying for Idiots. First it was Dying for Dummies, but no, Dying for Idiots, because Dying for Dummies is probably taken. And so what happened was that the publisher said, no way, Jose, you can't use that. So I didn't know what to call it. And I woke up one morning with three titles in my mind. The Fun of Dying, The Fun of Staying in Touch, and The Fun of Growing Forever. All three titles were in my mind. I didn't know what the other two would be. I thought Staying in Touch would probably be about communication, but I thought The Fun of Dying, that's a way better title. We published it. It came out in the fall of 2010. And that was a time when I was beginning to grow spiritually and didn't even know it. I started teaching and speaking about all of this. I began to be sometime, I think it was probably a year later, I became kind of burned out about the whole thing. I mean, I was doing all this traveling, all this teaching, and I was thinking, I'm going to stop doing it. So one morning I woke up and I realized I had just been in a garden and I had been watching four young men, beautiful young men, one of whom had darker skin, and they were singing and dancing. My favorite kind of entertainment is musicals. I love musicals. Well, they were doing a musical for me, and the part I remembered was, you've got a wonderful story to tell, life goes on forever, and there is no hell, so go out there and share that beautiful story. And they were laughing, and they were dancing, and I thought, okay, I guess I have to go back on the road. Believe it or not, that did happen. And I've been trying to teach it ever since. The fun of staying in touch came along in the spring. I mean, this is what happens when it's like I'm pregnant suddenly with a book and I start writing. I wrote The Fun of Staying in Touch. It came out, I believe, in 2014. And I was having a lot of fun with this. Then in the middle of 2014, I began to feel that my mother, who had died in 2012, wanted to contact me. I didn't know that instead it was my primary guide, but I did make an appointment with a medium, and I did get wonderful validations from my family. It was lovely. And then late in that it was in February of 2015, very late, she said, guides are all here. My goodness, you have 11 guides. And so, you want to meet with them? I said, sure. So most of them, I think I had five who were trying to keep me in line for my personal life. And there were four, I think, who were doing working with me on fiction. Fiction is a whole other story I'll have to tell you about another time. And three or four were working on this work, doing this channeling of nonfiction. And then my primary guide stepped forward. And she said, okay, your primary guide has stepped forward, and he says you may call him Thomas. And I knew who it was before he confirmed it. It was Thomas Jefferson. I've always been very devoted to trying to understand, thinking much of Thomas Jefferson, but I didn't know why. This was why. We have a long story. I'll tell you a little later, if I have time, more about our story. But we've had 17 lifetimes together, and I'm basically doing his work, completing his Jefferson work now. I didn't understand that for a long time, but now I do get it. All he said was that he was, you know, he wanted me to know now who he was. And so that was kind of fun. You know, it's sort of like lunchtime talk. Guess what? I've had 17 lifetimes with Thomas Jefferson. But yeah, then I sort of forgot about it. But then he again contacted me through the same medium, and we had a heart-to-heart. The reason he wanted to be in my life was that and active, because, of course, they're in our lives every night. When our bodies sleep, our minds don't need to, so we meet with our primary guides. And I'd done everything up until then that he wanted me to do, but I was balking at writing about Jesus. I would not do that. So he finally figured he had to get into my life and tell me I had to do it. And that was when I said, okay, because he showed me that basically if we don't raise the consciousness of the planet and do it fairly quickly, humanity is not going to have a place that's worth living very quickly. Not because we're going to destroy the ecology of the planet, but because we are going to so lower our vibratory rate that basically we'll be living in a Mad Max world and even worse than that. So he started channeling, liberating Jesus to me in early June, I believe, very end of May, early June of 2015. And then one day he let this medium know that he was stepping back and that I was going to be channeling the Master. I didn't know what that meant, but at 2:00 in the morning the next day, I was literally on my feet heading for my computer before I woke up, and I worked from then until 8:00 the following night working with a whole different, much, much stronger entity who was confident Jesus. He channeled all of liberating Jesus in about 2 weeks. And that to me is amazing too, because I could never have done that. As we were more and more into it, I began to sometimes hear his thoughts. It was the most, literally the most amazing experience of my life. I didn't know for a long time why I had been chosen to do it, but I was chosen to do it. And again, Thomas was behind it all. Many people think he was an atheist. He was not. He was a devotee of Jesus. He made what would they call the Jefferson Bible. This was his study Bible. He didn't intend it to be published. But he pasted side by side the words of Jesus that he thought were real in English, French, Greek, and Latin. And that was how he studied. He more and more and more wanted to understand and to share the truths that Jesus came to bring. And so it's natural that he would want to write. It turns out he actually did write a book, but it never was published because it was just, he thought, just not the time to come out with this news. Now he thinks it is the time. So I cannot take credit at all for liberating Jesus, because liberating Jesus was truly the work of the entity that we used to think once was, in fact, Thomas Jefferson, completing some of his work. And I'm honored and thrilled that I get to have a little part in it, but I could never have written that book without him and, of course, without Jesus himself. So when we come back, I'm going to tell you why I was chosen to write that book. This is Roberta Grimes on Seek Reality. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Seek Reality, and this is Roberta Grimes telling you my life story. Now, other things happen. Obviously, I went to law school. I've been married for 45 years to the same man. We're working on that still, and very happy to be in that position. My children are doing well. I have 5 grandchildren, so I've had a life, a very full life, actually. I've practiced law for small businesses. It's been a wonderful life. But always, from the age of 8, I have been working on this. Now I understand why I've been working on this. Thomas eventually, in later readings, told me more about the fact that we've had all these lifetimes together, that he talked more about his lifetime as Thomas Jefferson. He was actually, for a long time, you or I wouldn't be, he was so down on that lifetime that he immediately went back to have one more. It was supposed to have been his last lifetime, as you could imagine. I mean, it was a very full life. But he was so dissatisfied with the way he had handled it that he literally took one more lifetime as someone named John in Wales, just a regular guy, to get back what he said back into balance before he could stop incarnating. But the more I worked with him, knowing who he was, and I mean, he's got a very distinctive personality. Let's just say he does not suffer fools. He's quite impatient with me when I get silly. Nearly always, apparently, I've been a male. And working with me as a female, which I think was necessary for this particular lifetime, I can see why we chose that I would be female. But I think it kind of tries his patience. I have a feeling that as soon as I die, I'll revert to being male again. But eventually, he talked more freely about why I was chosen to write Liberating Jesus, because I was chosen to write that book by the Lord, which is hard for me to understand. But Thomas had sent me in. He sent me in to do two things which he thought were unfinished work of his Jefferson lifetime. One was he had written this book that he then never published. He wrote it in old age, but it was about, basically it was Liberating Jesus written for the 18th century. And he never published it, but he really wanted it published. He said he wanted that book written for the modern age, and that's what Liberating Jesus happened to be. So he had me priming to do that. I mean, I went to law school, but then I majored in early Christian history. I was reading the Bible. I was getting ready to write that book for him, even though I didn't know it. But Jesus headed the team that dictated A Course in Miracles, which came to us in the 60s. And it's magnificent. It's brilliant. It's terrific. But it's way over our heads. You know, he thought maybe the teachings, the original gospel teachings from 2,000 years ago, which were, of course, given to Iron Age primitives, maybe they were too simple for us. Maybe we would react better and learn better if he gave us the teachings in a fancier way. But he aimed way over what we were able to deal with. So what happened then was that he decided in the early 80s, according to Thomas, that he was going to try one more time. He was basically going to restate the original gospel teachings. And they were looking for what they called a pure vessel, which was someone who could channel, but that wasn't known as a channel and had a serious life. And so, bless his little heart, Thomas nominated me because he was priming me to write this anyway. They didn't know if I could channel, though. So Thomas Jefferson did no talking about his lifetime during his lifetime. He was an extremely private man, and he certainly never talked about his marriage. He burned all her papers. But in order to prove that I could channel, he put into my head, researching and writing, My Thomas, which is the journal, the fictionalized journal of Thomas Jefferson's marriage, told from the viewpoint of his wife. And it spans the Revolutionary War. It's the best thing by far I will ever write. I can recommend it to you because it reads like a novel, but it turns out it's true. He led the team that channeled that book. So then they proved that I could channel. And according to Thomas, they spent the next 20 years. That book came out in 93. And they spent the next 20 years thereabouts getting me ready to do Liberating Jesus. I knew none of this. I'm always on a need-to-know basis with this man, but I'm happy that I got to do it, and I'm just happy it's out there. I have no idea what will happen with it now, but clearly they want me to teach that. Although, because he has me on a need-to-know basis, there'll be a lot of other things probably that I'm supposed to do that I'll find out about only when they happen. One of the things that my coming to understand that the gospel teachings of Jesus are true, one of the things that did for me is to make me think, okay, I have to try them, really try them seriously. Many people think Jesus sort of gave them as kind of dicta, what attorneys would call dicta. They weren't really important. Well, they were very important. And he didn't say try, he said do. So I started saying that, and then one day someone said to me, well, what do they do if you follow them? And I said, you know, that's a good question. So I began in early summer of 2011 to try to figure out how really to follow the teachings of Jesus. And what I found is that they actually are like laws of physics for consciousness. It's amazing how well they work if you just take them seriously. The first one that we all sort of think loving is easy. Well, in order to be able to love as Jesus tells us to love, he says, don't just love, you know, your family members. That doesn't get you anything. Even the Pharisees do that. No, he wanted us to love even the most unlovable, and basically to love equally, everybody equally. The only way to do that is first to learn absolute forgiveness. And what I came to understand pretty quickly is to get yourself ready to forgive, you've got to develop gratitude. Being thankful turns out to be a core thing. He doesn't talk about it much, but it's very important. So I set out first to learn to forgive, and I came up with methods that actually work. It's the most amazing thing that I can begin to tell you. It's extraordinary how well these forgiveness tricks work. It took me maybe 2 months, and I discovered that I was no longer needing to forgive because nothing ever bothered me anymore. Think about that. Think about living your life, and even if something big goes wrong, it doesn't bother you. You don't react inside. It was peaceful all of a sudden. And what I found then is that love springs naturally once you have really gotten forgiveness nailed. It is an extraordinary thing, but you don't have to meditate. You don't have to chant. You don't have to do yoga. You don't have to do anything. It's not a journey. It's a state of being. And it's a state of being that is a way to retrain your mind. You've trained it to react negatively. You just retrain it to have peace, and it's that simple. So it's the kind of thing, following the teachings of Jesus, is the kind of thing which in a busy Western lifestyle you can easily do. So then, of course, that meant it was time for a book. So my 2016 book was The Fun of Growing Forever. We must learn to live together. No, I can't even remember what its subtitle is. Oh, you can't transform the world until you transform yourself. The Fun of Growing Forever. I recommend it strongly if you're sick of being frustrated and angry and all the negative emotions that human life will arise in you. It's very, very important, I think, for us to use this lifetime as we came to use it, which is to grow spiritually. You can make so much growth spiritually in one lifetime that you can make this lifetime your last lifetime, even if you're old. I didn't start working on this until I was well into my 60s. So it's very, very easy to do it. Even if I can do it, I guess I would just say anybody can. You know, people often ask me what I believe, and I don't believe anything. I'm lousy at believing. I'm very, very skeptical. But then I learned at the age of 8 that there really is something big behind the curtain. But I didn't want to know. I didn't want to comfort myself. Oh, that must be God, and I go on with my life. I wanted to know what that was. And that's why I did this research. I've been researching all of this for half a century. And first, most of that time, I was doing it only for myself, which is why in my books, I give you footnotes for where I learned stuff. But nearly everything I've learned, you can find everywhere. But the evidence of what is actually going on is abundant, and it's absolutely consistent, and it's available to everyone. I'm going to keep on telling you what I've learned and, frankly, what I continue to learn. I do continue to learn new things. But please, don't take my word for it. What I hope to do is open your mind to the possibility that there is a greater reality, there is, and that you can learn about it. You can. All my fun books, except The Fun of Living Together, include an annotated bibliography of 70-odd books that I've chosen, and I tell you what they're about, and some of them are available for free on the internet, actually. You can, in maybe a year or two, do all the same research that it's taken me an entire lifetime to do. Anybody can do this. It is not difficult. If you have questions, you know you can always contact me and I'll answer your questions. But the purpose, my core purpose that I think is my purpose in life, is to teach you what I know so that you will not be afraid. You literally never will fear anything again. You'll raise your consciousness vibration and you can make this your last lifetime. That's my purpose for my life. Now, I don't own my life. I'm basically, I think, an avatar. So there are other purposes which are now being sort of made more clear to me, and I'll be talking about those shortly. But please just understand for now, there are other people who have done this research too, and all of us have come up with so much the same conclusions that we complete each other's sentences when we meet. All of this is true. It's real. It will take away your fear. It will make your life more joyous than I can begin to tell you. And so, you know, you may as well give yourself sooner or later the gift of freedom from fear and freedom from ignorance. I promise you, I'll never tell you anything I believe. I will only tell you what I'm so confident about that there can really literally be no doubt about it. And because I'm a skeptic, and I'm not going to put anything on that beautiful tapestry of eternal reality that I'm not certain belongs there. This is Roberta Grimes on Seek Reality, and we're going to be right back. Of course, as you know, this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes, and I'm really, really glad that you could join us today. This is very personal for me, and it's a little bit emotional, which is why I think I stumble a bit. I really never want anything to be about myself, but I've come to understand that if you don't know who I am, why would you trust me to when I say anything to you? So my life is an open book. You can ask me any question at all. But please, above all, never forget that you are a powerful, powerful, eternal being. You never began, you never will end. And when you really grasp all the implications of that glorious fact, it's going to change everything in your life for the better. Next week, our guest is going to be Ira Pastor. Ira is a fascinating man. He's the CEO of BioQuark, Inc., and that's a company that's dedicated to extending, you know, physical life by whatever means possible. They do other things, too. But he contacted me a few years back, and we have become email friends. He's actually really a delightful man. I keep telling him why whatever it is that he is trying to do is unlikely to work, and he thanks me profusely, and then he tries it anyway. I think it's time you meet this really, really decent, open-minded, loving man. He is a joy. And even though he plays for what we afterlife researchers think of as the opposing team, that traditional matter-based group of scientists, Ira Pastor is a wonderful human being. Please be sure to join us next week. And of course, this week, your guest has been your host. I've always been reluctant to talk about myself, and none of this is about me. But now, as I say, I've come to see that it does matter. If I'm asking you to listen to me and believe me, then it's perfectly fair for you to say, well, who the heck are you, lady? And to ask how I've learned what I'm telling you now that I'm confident that I actually know. I am confident that I know it. It took me most of my life and most of it, you know, about 40 years of study before I felt that I was certain that what I had learned was true. And I'll never share with you anything that I am not certain is true. There are many things we don't know everything about yet. I mean, that's only natural. Our minds, when we come into our bodies, are probably 5% of our vast eternal mind, something like that. So it's hard with our sort of limited minds for us even to understand what's going on. But we're beginning to put together enough of it that we really are beginning to understand. I came to think that I do need occasionally to share with you my personal story, and I'll do this again probably in a year or two when more stuff has happened. I think you deserve to know why I've spent my life doing this research and the reasons why I'm now devoting the rest of my life to sharing the truth with you. But I just want to remind you again, really none of it's been up to me. I learned In 2015, in February, I learned that I had agreed before I was born to come to Earth as basically an avatar for my beloved eternal friend, and he's the entity who was in his next-to-last lifetime, the great American founding father, Thomas Jefferson. Most of our lifetimes together, apparently he's been a rebel and I've been a straight person, but nearly always I've been male. I mean, we're not eternal lovers. Instead, we're eternal buddies. And I kind of like that relationship better, actually. Remember, each person living has a primary spirit guide. You cannot be in a body unless you have a spirit who is working with you. We meet with them at night. Our bodies are sleeping, our minds don't need to sleep, so we meet with them, and for the most part, that guidance system works well. There are ways you can come to actually know your spirit guide if you'd like to do it, but I never wanted to. I was like, I drive a car, I have no idea what's under the hood, and I really couldn't care less. So he was the one who insisted that in order for him to tell me some things I would need to know at this stage of my life, he broke into my life, and I think that's great. Now he doesn't want to talk through a medium anymore. That's been true for almost a year. But we're, I think, it's so in tune now during the night that there doesn't even seem to be a need to be. I don't feel a lack of conversation with him. But Thomas is my dear friend, my spirit guide, and I realize now that I agreed to do some very specific things for him. Two in particular, that apparently he entered his Jefferson lifetime and determined to accomplish, but that he never managed to get done. Of course, a lot of other things he did manage to get done as Thomas Jefferson. That he probably had the most productive and useful life I can even imagine on so many levels. But there were two things that he really wanted to do, and he chose certain specific situations, circumstances in his life to better accomplish them, but he didn't manage to do it. And these two particular things continued to weigh on his mind. He says now that for a long time after his death as Thomas Jefferson, he was down on that lifetime overall, which is hard for, I mean, if you or I had been Thomas Jefferson, we'd be, you know, strutting around with our chests puffed out thinking how terrific that life had been. He was not happy with it for a long time. He says he's made his peace with it now, but I quote, he said, I had too much power and I didn't always use it well. One of the things that happens, of course, when we transition is we do start to go through a period of judging our lifetime, and we're our own judge, and we can be a tough judge, and he really is tough on himself, but he has made his peace with it. And one of the things that he decided to do was that he would ask me, his friend, to come in and complete those two tasks. We chose a time when there was a sort of a flurry of excitement and distress in the higher afterlife levels. It's not the afterlife, it's real life, but I'm trying to explain to you where this is all going on. Some of the most elevated beings were panicked when in the 1940s we actually exploded atomic bombs in anger. And that was a bridge too far for them. It had been very useful for them to have us ignorant of what was really going on, because then we really would take our lessons seriously. But they decided in the early part of the 1940s that they were going to have to make us begin to take our lessons much more seriously without being ignorant as we were, because we had basically lowered the vibration of the planet too much. So that was when he and I chose that I would come in. I was one in the first group of people, those born in the 1940s, who came to work on raising the consciousness of this planet away from fear and toward more perfect love. We are starseed children. Craig Hogan is another, and I know some others as well, who came in to do this work. And I only know about this, it's not been something I've ever studied, because our wonderful friend Joyce Stewart, who was recently a guest, has made a special study of this series of children. You know, you've heard of indigo children, all those others. Apparently, there's a science behind that too. Who knew? But we've come to Earth purely to live lives in service, so humankind can raise its vibration as rapidly as possible away from fear and toward love, and we can begin at last to bring the kingdom of God on earth. So I came in to learn and teach with Thomas's guidance, but I realize now that he also wanted me to complete these two lost missions from his Jefferson lifetime. The first of these things, of course, was to defend the historical Jesus and to share the genuine gospel teachings. He wanted to do that. He talked about it during his lifetime, especially later in life. And then very late in life, he wrote a book that was apparently lost. I believe it may be at Monticello, though. I remember when I did research there, they said there were writings that were never being made public. So I think that may have been one of them. But he said, nevertheless, he wanted the book written for today, so that it would speak to people today. And with his help and the help actually of Jesus himself, I wrote Liberating Jesus. It's really channeled by them. I don't think I had any part in it at all. So the first of these things was to defend the historical Jesus and to share the genuine gospel teachings. The second thing that Jesus meant to do as Jefferson and failed to do, and this failure seems to have been what troubled him most after his death, is what the fun of living together is all about. That's my 2017 fun book. You and I are going to enjoy our visit with Ira Pastor next week, and then 2 weeks from now, I'm going to tell you, as Paul Harvey would have put it, the rest of my story. As you know, my nonfiction books are Liberating Jesus, My Thomas, The Fun of Dying, The Fun of Staying in Touch, The Fun of Growing Forever, and The Fun of Living Together. And for young children, a beautiful picture book called The Fun of Meeting Jesus. There's another one, by the way, being worked on now. You can order my books through bookstores or on Amazon.com, and they're also available as audiobooks. If you want to talk about any of my books, or if you want to talk about anything at all, you know you can contact me through RobertaGrimes.com. I always answer emails. Just please make sure you give me your correct email address so I can answer you. I don't know how to get around the fact that some people, very few fortunately, will send me a heartfelt email. I'll earnestly answer it, and then their email address doesn't work, so I can never get the answer to them. So if you don't hear from me, that's why. Send another email. Of course, as you know, past episodes of Seek Reality are available on webtalkradio.net, on iTunes, and through the Seek Reality app that you can find for free in the iTunes store. Earlier episodes are being rebroadcast, I think it's after about a year, by our wonderful friends at Dream Vision 7 Radio. And if you ever wonder where you can find Seek Reality, just go to RobertaGrimes.com and click on the radio tab. And while you're there, by the way, send me a little email. All you have to do is go to the contact box. If you go to the contact box and you fling that email into the ether, I will get it and I will answer you. Some days I do nothing but answer people, and I think that's the most important work that I do, making sure that each person who seeks truly does begin to find. Meanwhile, as you know, this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Please enjoy and make the most of this coming week in our one reality, knowing that you are a powerful, eternal being, and you are infinitely loved.
You've been listening to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Roberta blogs and answers questions at robertagrimes.com. Join us every week as we explore what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about the one reality we all share. Knowing the truth changes everything.